Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Hello and welcome to the brand new Game Day podcast, looking back on a brilliant Premier League weekend. King Arthur slays the league leaders as the Happy Hammers flex their top four muscles. A silver lining takes champions Manchester City top. And Fred the Red gives ravishing Ralph victory in his first game as Old Trafford boss. Plus, Newcastle win at last. Bamford's back with a bang for Leeds. And Liverpool leave it late at the Molyneux. All that and more on the podcast that's as deadly as Divock Origi in stoppage time. It's the Game Day post-match review from TalkSport.
This is Game Day.
And a very warm welcome to Messrs. Trevor Sinclair and Darren Lewis. I'm a bit out of sync, actually, Darren. I usually see you on a Thursday, but here we are recording on a Sunday evening, looking dashing as ever, and no doubt crowing from Liverpool's last gasp victory over Wolverhampton Wanderers.
I certainly am. I want to be gracious in victory, but I really can't because these are fine margins and I've got to take everything I can. And I don't know what might be coming up from Trevor's fantastic former club. So I've got to go with whatever I can. And Liverpool, absolutely fantastic. It doesn't have to be pretty, as we all know. It just has to be resulting in the 3 points.
And on the subject of Trevor's former clubs, I guess it's been a mixed weekend in the Sinclair household because West Ham picked up a magnificent win. Manchester City, superb again. Saw you tweeting about Celtic on Sunday as they picked up 3 points. But defeats for Blackpool and Queen's Park Rangers, not quite the perfect weekend for you, Trevor.
Yeah, good evening, Crookie. Good evening, Lewis. Yeah, I was very disappointed with Blackpool. It was a horrendous weekend weather-wise up the northwest, and Luton came, did a job. I think it was certainly a leveller for the performance that Blackpool put out there, and fair play to Luton, they got the win. And then Queen's Park Rangers, I watched some of that game this afternoon, and I thought Stoke deserved the win. The goalkeeper played well, and I thought Stoke definitely deserved the 3 points. So yeah, a little bit of mixed fortune for my teams, but certainly for the Premier League teams, did very, very well.
It is essential listening for you on every Premier League Saturday. Back-to-back exclusive commentaries on game day across the TalkSport network. And it all starts all over again right here. These are nervy moments for West Ham. It's Mount again with the delivery high up towards Thiago Silva. And it's bounced in and Chelsea have the lead. Thiago Silva with the downward header. Oh. Jorginho, a risky back pass. Mendy's in trouble here. He's under pressure from Bowen. Oh, and he's brought Bowen down. And the referee says penalty. Lanzini steps up right footed and smashes it beyond Mendy. And West Ham United are level. Mason Mount on the volley. What a goal for Chelsea. It's an absolute sensation. Mason Mount on his 100th Chelsea start. Socek floats the ball high down the middle towards Antonio. It's headed away. Comes back to Sofal on the edge of the penalty area. Now Bowen with the left-footed effort into the corner. And West Ham a level out of almost nothing. But what a strike it was from Jared Bowen. Masuaku down the left wing. Thought about the cross. Socek is among those in the middle. It's delivered high and it's got in. Would you believe it? It's beaten Edouard Mendy and West Ham have surely won it late on here. Now he blows the final whistle and West Ham are on to something special this season. They have beaten Chelsea here by 3-2, and David Moyes is pumping his fist. He's punching the air down below us. A remarkable result here at London Stadium.
West Ham 3, Chelsea 2. Only one place to start, really. Fantastic result once again for West Ham at home. The same scoreline by which they beat Liverpool earlier in the season. We'll start with Chelsea, though, Darren Lewis. Thomas Tuchel, very critical of the Blues in midweek. They weren't great last weekend against Manchester United either. So I guess that the big question from a Chelsea perspective, was this result coming?
Yeah, it was coming. Tuchel could see it coming because he said so, as you were saying, after the Watford game on Wednesday night. I listened to the fallout from that on TalkSport and I just got the sense that he could see maybe a one or two of his players, and Trevor can speak to this far better than I can, but sometimes you just know, don't you, within a squad, if you're a teammate, if you're the manager, obviously, you know your players. And he could see that there was just a sign of his side creaking. Listen, they've been fabulously consistent so far this season, best defensive record in the top five European leagues. They've been winning games without Romelu Lukaku, dipping into their squad, mixing and matching. And we praised them when they did it all without their £100 million striker, without Pulisic and Mount and Kovacic. So I don't necessarily believe we can criticise them as such, and because everyone has a blip, an off day. It is going to be fascinating to see how they respond to this setback against a very good West Ham side. This wasn't slipping up against a Southampton or a Burnley or another. This was against a side that are serious players in this season's race for the top four.
Trevor, Darren mentioned Romelu Lukaku there, and I think Thomas Tuchel afterwards was saying it's going to take him a while to get back up to full match sharpness. How much did they miss Ben Chilwell at the weekend, and how much are they going to miss him going forward?
Well, I think they missed him immensely. Not that they haven't got strength in that area, because I actually believe Alonso does a really good job in a 3-4-3. Probably not great enough as a defender to be a fullback, but certainly got an eye for goal, and he's creative in the final third going forward on that left-hand side. So I think as a wing-back, you're not missing that much. Obviously, Chilwell's hat-trick and these performances have been superb once he got back in the side. So I do believe they've missed him, but listen, I think it's very undeniable that they're missing Kante. He's probably got about six lungs. He covers every blade of grass. And he does a lot of work that still goes unseen by a lot of fans. And he's just one of them players. He's so selfless. He works his socks off. He breaks things up. And he has got good quality going forward as well. And I feel if you're going to miss a player in your side, especially right in the middle of the pitch, down the spine, the engine, I think he's the one. And, you know, as much as I like to see Loftus-Cheek getting opportunities, and Jorginho, obviously, he's a top, top player, I just feel they missed that real quality playing against the top teams. And listen, let's not kid ourselves. West Ham are a top team now.
We saw the sublime and the ridiculous, really, in this game. A fantastic goal from Mason Mount, deserved to be on the winning team for that strike. And then the actual winning goal from Arthur Masuaku, which is clearly a cross. Not a great moment for Mendy. Didn't have a great afternoon all round, really, with the concession of the penalty as well. But how much credit, Darren, do we give David Moyes for the tactical switch that he made, matching up Chelsea with that back three?
I felt for a long time that David Moyes doesn't get the credit he deserved, and I think it's because he lost it after the disaster at Manchester United. But what he has done at West Ham, not just this season, as we all know, last season was fabulous. And we're going to praise the tactical observations, if you like, that he made to his players. But it's his scouting, it's the recruitment, it's the mentality, it's the work ethic, that bar that he set so high for his players to reach. It's a combination of all those things that have made this not the surprise that some people thought it possibly could be, because these players have been turning in performances of this consistency all the way through his reign. And if you look at this season on its own, they've beaten the two Manchester clubs in the Carabao Cup, they've beaten Liverpool in the Premier League, and now they've beaten the champions of Europe in the Premier League. That's no fluke. You can maybe fluke one or two of those results, but you can't do it four times.
They're into the quarterfinals of the Carabao Cup. They're top of a Europa League group that I thought maybe they might struggle in, but they've got good results out in Zagreb, for example, against Dinamo. And I think this is a seriously good West Ham squad. If they're clever in the January window, they bring in another striker to take the pressure off Antonio. They bring in another central defender, maybe to give themselves a bit of depth. Maybe beat Newcastle to Lingard. I think he can't possibly make the same mistake of turning his nose up at West Ham again. They really could stay the distance in the race for the top four.
Chelsea started the day on top. Liverpool are now on top. Manchester City can go to the top. Manchester City have possession and Bernardo Silva has picked out Foden. Corner of the penalty area. Early cross. Sterling must score and does score. He just torments Watford. Foden will take the corner. Left-footed, curled into... And Grealish has got a free header and he's headed it straight at the goalkeeper. City manoeuvring the ball perfectly again and Gundogan into Foden. And Grealish is in there and he's stopped by Backman and somehow Sterling following up failed to convert. Manchester City have not dropped points from a winning position since May. Sterling on to Gundogan. And now Bernardo Silva gets outside the box. Ilkay Gundogan, good save by Batman. Bernardo Silva is back on the ball. And he scored 2-0. Now Walker, edge of the penalty area. Bernardo Silva taking over onto his left foot. Oh, what a goal that is by Bernardo Silva. Curled into the top corner. I have got far too much respect for the rivalry between Liverpool and Manchester City at the moment to adjudicate between Bernardo Silva and Mohamed Salah, but they're probably the two best players in the Premier League right now. Lucho Hernandez inside the penalty area, drives in, score! Oh no! Hit the inside of the post, now it's in! He scored at the second of 10. Lucho Hernandez makes it. Watford 1, Manchester City 3.
Comfortable victory in the end. 3-1 winners, Manchester City, away from home at Vicarage Road. Trevor, Pep Guardiola said afterwards, it was City's best performance of this season. Do you agree?
I actually feel it didn't matter who they were playing against on Saturday. I thought they were unbelievable. The retention of the ball, the rotation of the players, which we see week in, week out, but it just seemed to click really well. And I think the catalyst for me, possibly one of the best players in the Premier League at the moment, is Bernardo Silva. His performance, his use of the ball, his movement off the ball, his clinicalness in the final third, which Manchester City at times have been, accused of not being clinical enough. And just getting Grealish and Foden back into the side. You know, Foden's cross, do you want jam on top of that for the goal for Raheem? And then the quality of just keeping things alive for the second goal by Bernardo Silva. And then the third goal was sublime. I just thought he was outstanding. He was the best player on the pitch by a mile. And, to think that we potentially nearly let him go in the summer, it's quite scary. But he looks like he's enjoying it. The team look like they're really enjoying it. Each other's company on the pitch, and they look very, very strong. I mean, they it's almost like it's clicked, and this is the time now that they're going to go on a run. And watch out the Premier League, because if you're not picking up 3 points week in, week out, I think they'll form a gap.
Can I just say, this is a little bit like when I listen, I'm of the belief that this is the best West Ham side we've ever seen, right, in the Premier League, right? And Trevor's played in a few very, very good West Ham sides, so he probably can knock me down on that. Well, you just said, Trevor, that this is the best Man City, well, Pep says it's the best Man City performance this season. And I there have been so many. Yeah. I really, really like the performance against PSG. I thought that was outstanding, not because of the technical ability, but because of the graft to show up the outstanding players on the PSG side to embarrass them in many ways. You know, you had so many good players that weren't in that particular side, and yet they rolled their sleeves up and they fought for it, and they should have scored two or three more goals. So in a way, when Pep says this was the best performance of the season against Watford, there is so much to choose from, because you were without so many of your best players for that game as well.
Yeah, that'll be a concern as well, I feel, for the rest of the Premier League teams, especially the ones vying for that top spot. You know, the fact that Manchester City didn't have Kevin De Bruyne, they didn't have Foden and they didn't have Grealish, and still turned over PSG with, Galactico players in their side, and came from a 1-0 goal against. So, yeah, no, I agree with you, Darren. I think there's been a lot of good performances. The Chelsea performance, that win was superb. Manchester United at Old Trafford, That was, that was chalk and cheese when you look at the quality of the players and the performance from both sides. And again, Liverpool, I thought they were really good at Liverpool and probably played players out of position. But yeah, it's a concern. They're starting to hit top form and yeah, top of the league as well to boot.
Look at the smile on his face. It's a, it's a magnificent 7 wins on the spin for City in all competitions. Raheem Sterling, 1 goal shy now of 100 in the Premier League. But once again, as we mentioned there, Bernardo Silva, very much the star of the show. Very quickly on Watford, only 3 points above the relegation places. That January transfer window is fast upon us. What do they need to do, Darren, in that window to ensure they don't make an immediate return to the Championship?
They need to maybe get one more defender in and some protection for that defence. They can score goals. We know that Josh King, Emmanuel Dennis looks a fantastic buy. But they do need some leadership in that defence because they're all over the place. You saw at left back, Trev played on the wing. So Trev will know all about how to find space in behind a left back who deserts his post. And Danny Rose did that on a few occasions against City, which was footballing suicide in many respects. I think they need somebody who's going to add some leadership to that back line. If they can get that, they've got a chance because there's a very, very tight fight against relegation this season.
Yeah, there certainly is. We're going to focus on the relegation battle in the last part of the podcast. But let's talk about the last of the title contenders. It finished Wolves 0, Liverpool 1 at Molineux. Not Liverpool's most convincing performance of the season, but they found a way to get the job done. Eventually, Divock Origi, not for the first time in his Anfield career, coming up with a really important goal. First of all, Trevor, what does that tell us about the character of Liverpool? Because often championships are decided not on big victories, but on the 1-0 wins when you have to find a way to grind it out.
Yeah, I thought Liverpool were very good in general. They created a lot of good opportunities, but when they entered that final third, and it happened a lot last season, and I think it's easy to understand why it happened last season because they were conceding goals. So sometimes that confidence, that air of confidence from the forwards diminishes. But this season, they've not got any excuse because they're keeping a lot of clean sheets. So I was surprised they were a little bit misfiring, but they were all over the pitch. They were good. It was just in that final third, they weren't getting the look. I thought Wolves defended really well. Connor Cody, I thought, was excellent. The goalkeeper made some really good saves. And it looked like it could have been one of them games where they were just going to be frustrated and it wasn't their day. But they found a way, and it really is a great sign of a top team that has the desire to want to stay up there and compete for that Premier League title. And I've got to say, Origi's a special character because I couldn't do what he's done. You know, he hardly plays. He keeps himself tip-top condition. He seems to always have a smile on his face. He must have so much respect from the other players, especially the forwards who keep him out of that team. The fact that he just stays fit and stays ready. And it was a really technical quality goal that he scored on the swivel, knew exactly what he was doing before the ball came in, dropped his left shoulder looking like he was going to chop it with his right foot, let it come across, took it on the back foot, and it's a really tidy finish. And you can see the celebrations of one, his teammates, to show how popular he is amongst them, but also the fans, because he scored some big goals for Liverpool.
I was intrigued, Darren, by Jurgen Klopp's quote after the game, in which he said, "I hope Divock Origi's next manager plays him more than I do." I mean, talk about being down with faint praise.
He's made 34 appearances, 34 starts in 7 seasons. Oh. I mean, I can't decide whether or not he's a team player, very obviously. But is there a lack of ambition there as well? I mean, he has won big prizes. So it's almost ridiculous to use that phrase, but at some point in your footballing career, and again, I defer to Trevor on this, you know, you must want to start, yeah, no matter how much of a selfless team player you are, Trevor.
Yeah, we've seen it happen, and it typically it's a number 2 goalie or a number 3 goalkeeper. They're happy just to play a part in that keeper's union, train well, turn up for games, sit on the bench, be that supporting role. As a centre-forward, it's very untypical because centre-forwards are usually selfish buggers. So he is, listen, he's obviously a special personality. I'm like you though, Darren, I'd like to see him want to play and have that, a little bit more ambition. I'm sure there'd be a few decent clubs in the Premier League that I'd want his signature if he was available. But not only that, you know, it might, in a way, it might elongate his career because he's not playing a lot of football. He's not putting himself through, you know, the rings every week. And he might have a bit more freshness as he gets into his later years. He's, what is he, 26? So, yeah, maybe this will just give him a little bit more longevity and he'll start to play more football. Probably not at Liverpool unless they get serious injuries. But if he does make that move at some stage, I'd like to see him play and hopefully he will have a long purple patch in his career.
I believe he changed agents in the summer and is now part of the Will Salthouse stable. And I'm sure Darren will know that Will Salthouse has a relationship with the owners at West Ham. So maybe that could be a possible link come January. I felt a bit sorry in this game for Connor Cody because he put his body literally on the line to deny Diogo Jota a goal on his return to Molineux. I was told last week that Cody is on Newcastle's list of possible recruits when the transfer window reopens. I'm not sure he'd be desperate to leave Wolverhampton Wanderers, but can you understand, Darren Lewis, why he would be on Newcastle's shortlist just because of the type of character he is? Really important, actually, in that England dressing room, even though he doesn't play very often.
A couple of weeks ago, I would have said that they wouldn't get somebody like a Connor Cody because their situation looked so desperate. They were 7 points from safety, and it just looked as though it was all over. Statistically, no one has ever done what they're going to try to do, which is go 14 games, is it, Alex? We had a debate about this. 14 games without a victory.
Yeah.
And then let's try to stay up. But, you know, I hear all of these people saying, oh, Newcastle are going to go big in the window. They're going to spend 40, 50, 60 million pounds, whatever. Newcastle don't need marquee signings. They need the kind of player that Connor Cody is, a team player, a leader, somebody who's going to organise and somebody who cares. Because, it's, you know, we've seen with QPR, Everton, you know, lots of players are very, very quick to take the money. But do they care when the club's up against it? Are they willing to put in a shift? And as you started off by saying, Connor Cody was playing on one leg, but he helped he put his body on the line for the cause. That's the kind of player that you want with Newcastle in the position they are in now. Now, it's a lot tighter down there, so I think it will be an easier sell now than it would have been a couple of weeks ago. I think if they were to go out there and see if they could get him, and if they were to land him, they'd have a real chance of staying up.
Manchester United 1, Crystal Palace 0. A narrow victory then for Ralph Rangnick in his first game in charge at Old Trafford. I was interested afterwards, the German came out and said that Manchester United performed better than he expected. I thought they were excellent in the first half, showed a lot of intensity, much more controlled. And that was one of the key words that came out of Ralph's first press conference on Friday. Went back to type a bit in the second half, I thought, let Palace back into the game. And ultimately, Fred, the unlikely goal hero. We'll come to you first, Darren Lewis. What did you see in Ralph's first game in charge that maybe we haven't seen under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Michael Carrick?
I saw desire. I saw organisation. I saw more of a plan in the first 45 minutes than I'd seen for quite some time. And I think a lot of Man United fans watching that will be heartened by an optimistic about the future under Rangnick. The most significant thing for me wasn't necessarily the win. It was a clean sheet because there had been so many games that they had failed to score. It was the second longest run in their history, 15 games in a row. They needed to stop that particular rot. So for me, the clean sheet was the most important aspect of the performance and it gave them something very serious to build on.
Yeah, I think Darren's right there. First home clean sheet in 16 games in all competitions. And actually, the two fullbacks played a big part in that. Alex Tellez, who's in for Luke Shaw, who seems to be taking an age to recover from this concussion problem that he's had. And also Diogo Dalo. Now, I think that was more significant because Aaron Wan-Bissaka was fit and available only on the bench. Not only did Dalo offer a threat going forward, as did Tellez on the other side, but he kept Wilfried Zaha, the Palace captain, very quiet. Are we thinking now, Trevor, this is an opportunity for Dalo to really make that right-back spot his own? Because he would seem possibly to have more of the attributes that Ralph Rangnick would want from his fullbacks.
I think more of the attributes that any probably top half of the table team would want as a right-back. You need the game as it's evolved, your fullbacks are so important. And you want to defend one-on-one situations.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Want to be part of that unit. Move across the pitch laterally, but going forward, you have to offer, especially when you're playing a system where, you know, a 4-2-3-1, you need that overlap to create two against one in the wide areas. And I think he's got the engine to do that. He's got much better quality, you know, being quite frank, than Wan-Bissaka has in that final third. And I wasn't surprised to see him play and also play well. I thought the challenge that he had was tough against Zaha. But I thought he stuck to task really well. He communicated, he didn't dive in, he took responsibility. And I think that's what Ralph expects from his players. You know, there's going to be a hunger, there's got to be an appetite to affect the game, there's got to be an appetite to win individual battles, but certainly you've got to be creative if you're in them full-back positions. And, you know, I thought it was quite telling that the Crystal Palace only had two shots on target. You know, he talked about control earlier. That's controlling the opposition and controlling how many opportunities potentially come against you. So, yeah, I'm not surprised he was more impressed than he thought he would be with his first game. And, it's interesting. I don't think it's the swashbuckling Manchester United DNA, but maybe that'll come later. To start with, they want to stop leaking goals and winning 3 points in games. And that's a great start for Ralph.
One of the players I was disappointed with, Darren, not for the first time this season, it has to be said, and I'm loath to criticise him because he's done so much good work off the pitch, but Marcus Rashford, he got caught offside too many occasions not to frustrate Ranić and the Manchester United fans. And he just doesn't look to me at the moment, I watched his body language on Thursday against Arsenal as well, like a player who's particularly enjoying his football. He's not playing with a smile on his face and that fearlessness of youth that we maybe saw when he first came into the Manchester United team. How does Ranić get him back to his best?
One of the biggest features of Ranić's skill set is his man management. There are lots of players who speak so highly of his ability to improve them as players, as individuals, as well as having a good tactical structure. So what I think his priority list is to focus on the defence first, then focus on the attack, and then focus on the individuals who might well be just treading water a little bit. And Rashford is indeed one of those players. He just looks as though he's a player. We all know his ability, and you never lose that ability, that class. I'm not quite as keen as some to kind of write him off. He will never lose that quality that he has had for some time. But I think at the moment, Man United for a long time haven't been one thing or another. And I think he needs some focus. I think Rangnick will provide that for him. He'll put an arm around his shoulder. He'll remind him of what he can do. And he will give him a specific focus. Because for a long time, the players were sent out to save Ollie's job. And then after that, they were just sent out to mind the store, if you like, and keep the seat warm for Rangnick coming. They didn't really know what they were doing. Now Rangnick's come, he will give specific players jobs and we will see a lot more organisation throughout the entire side. And I think we'll see the best of Rashford, Sancho, Greenwood and all of those attackers. People say, oh, they've not got to get a striker in the window. No, they don't. They've got good strikers there, good goal getters. And I think all they need are 1-0 clean sheets. they can be back in that race for the top four.
Yeah, I think the important thing that you mentioned there, which I would definitely agree with, Darren, is reminders. All elite players forget things. I remember doing it myself. I played for Queen's Park Rangers and I was struggling to get the ball and turn and get out my fullback. And I remember Jerry pulling me to the side and said, do you know why it is that you're struggling? There's no reverse movement. And it's tiny little things which you can forget. And I think I played against a Russian team for England, B team, quite soon after that. And I absolutely destroyed the fullback because I was running in behind, checking to feet, coming to feet, going over the top. And all of a sudden, my game got back to where I wanted it to be. So I think what you're saying there, Ralph will speak to Rashford and he'll analyse his game and they'll talk about certain things and fundamentals that he's forgotten that he needs to start doing again to bring his game back on point.
So a winning start for the new man in the dugout at Old Trafford. Three defeats in a row now for Crystal Palace for the first time since Patrick Vieira took charge. They're still 6 points above the relegation places, but we'll need to halt that slide fairly quickly. No such problems for Steven Gerrard. Aston Villa 2, Leicester 1, 3 wins and a pretty gallant defeat against Manchester City from Gerrard's 4 games in charge. I want to focus, Darren, on the big officiating decisions in this game. Aston Villa thought they'd scored a legitimate goal just towards the end of the first half. It was cancelled out by VAR because they deemed that Kasper Schmeichel had control of the ball. Now, to be a goalkeeper and have control of the ball, you don't have to have both hands on the ball, contrary to popular belief. If you've got one hand on top of the ball and the ball is touching a surface, i.e. the grass, and the player kicks it away, then it can still be deemed a foul. On that basis, did the referee and VAR get that call right?
I'm not sure they did. I mean, listen, we've seen VAR make a number of dodgy decisions this week. I was at the West Ham game in midweek and West Ham had a goal chalked off for offside. I've looked at every frame. I cannot see anything that was clear or obvious about that decision. And I think what happens is, and I don't want to be controversial as such, but very often we see officials make a decision and sometimes on rare occasions, they're encouraged to overrule it. But all too often, other officials side with the official because they don't want him to be seen to have made a bad judgment. But I think, Trevor, you might disagree with this, and feel free to hit me over the head with this, but I don't think this was a good decision.
Yeah, I think, listen, I'm just looking at the letter of the law. If the goalkeeper had his hand on it, the ball was still. The players come in, caught him as well. I think Kasper knew the rules, and I think he's used the rules in his favour. So for me, by the letter of the law, he had the ball under control. He had one hand on the ball, even though it was on the grass. And I think the referee and the VAR did get involved. They had to. But what a game of football this was. I mean, Steven Gerrard at Aston Villa, I think he's been outstanding. I think the players look like they've had a rocket shoved up them. And there's so much desire to want to get results. And I was really impressed with the way that they came back into this game after going 1-0 down. And I just thought, to a man, everyone looked desperate to win, not just for themselves, but for the badge, for the fans and for the manager.
Can I ask you, do you think that football now is moving into an era of fresh ideas, younger men? I mean, we're seeing some of the older guard, Mourinho, I tried to see if I could think of someone whose star has fallen so dramatically. Rafa doesn't appear to have the same edge and sparkle that he once had. You know, and yet you're seeing obviously those top three managers, they're all younger men. Yeah. Gerrard's coming, he's a younger man. Vieira, I know they've lost their last three, but they're playing better, much more fluid, much more organised and better to watch under Roy Hodgson. Is this a period for the younger men now to take over in terms of Premier League football?
Yeah, I think it is. I think there's been a changing of the guard for quite a while now with managers coming in who seem a lot smarter, understand formation a lot better. They're helpers. Listen, a coach is supposed to help. He's not supposed to go in there and fall out of everyone and make everyone feel uncomfortable and scared to make a mistake. That's not a coach. So I think managers now that are coming into football clubs want managers to be the front of their company, of their club. They want them to be able to speak to the media. They want them to be able to explain why they're making certain decisions. And I think the managers that you talking about, you know, Steven speaks very well. He speaks like a manager already. I think with Frank, Arteta, Vieira, very softly spoken. I can't listen, he'll have a turn on him if the players do start doing things that he's not asking them to do, and he'll demand certain things. But in general, you're going to do that for Patrick Vieira. So I wouldn't have thought he'd have to go to that tool of giving them a dressing down too often. So yeah, I think it's a change of the guard. There's a new breed of manager, and it's a manager that understands the game and wants to help the players.
What did you guys make of the Leicester penalty claims in the second half? Keenan Dewsbury Hall went down. We were watching in the studio while presenting the boot room. Darren Ambrose was convinced that was a penalty. And then right at the end of the game, Tyrone Mings appeared to absolutely clean out Kasper Schmeichel. Can Leicester feel a bit hard done by, Darren?
Yes. I definitely think the first one was a penalty. I watched it in real time. I was amazed. Did it go to VAR? We think it did go to VAR, didn't it?
Well, they always check those decisions. It's just a case of whether it's a formal check or just a nod to the referee to say nothing to see here. But yeah, I would imagine they did take a close look at that one.
The defender puts his foot on Dewsbury Hall's foot. I cannot see how that was not a penalty. And I have to be honest as well, I can't see how Tyrone Mings' elbow in the face of Kasper Schmeichel wasn't a penalty either. And this is what I mean. I don't think the officials covered themselves in glory in the game at all.
Well, Leicester beaten again. We've spoken about the January transfer window. I think the top target for Brendan Rodgers should be a set-piece coach, because they concede so many goals from corners and free kicks. It's almost getting ridiculous now. Aston Villa actually leapfrogged the Foxes into 10th in the table. Leicester dropping into the bottom half. That was a great game, as Trevor has already articulated. So too was the game at Elland Road. It finished Leeds 2, Brentford 2, a real humdinger up in Yorkshire. Leeds taking an early lead courtesy of Tyler Roberts. Brentford turned it behind. Baptiste and Canos putting them in front midway through the second half. Patrick Bamford on his return from injury with a 95th minute equaliser. I'd imagine, Trevor, that is the sweetest feeling in the world for a footballer, and he's going to make a massive difference now for Leeds now that he's fit.
Absolutely. I think they've missed him immensely, and I think we're now starting to realise what a capable footballer is. And it's not just about his numbers when he's about putting the ball in the back of the net. His work rate, how clever he is, he brings players into play, his movement, winning fouls. I think his leadership qualities are superb. And he has had an elite upbringing. Let's not forget that. He's a Chelsea, former Chelsea Academy graduate. He's probably been a bit of a later developer. It took his time to get to the top. But I think now we're starting to see why he is such an important player for Leeds. And, you know, there's only one better thing than scoring a last-minute equaliser. It's scoring a last-minute winner, which I've scored a couple of them. But he'll be buzzing. He'll be great. He'll be glad to be back in the team. And he'll be glad, because there's nothing worse when you're injured and you're seeing your team struggle. You can't contribute. And you're still picking up your wages. You're still there. You're still seeing the pain. So if he's an honest lad and he comes across as a really articulate young man who takes his job seriously and who takes responsibility for his role in that side, he'll be delighted to be able to help his mates.
And it wasn't just him making his comeback either. Luke Ayling also back in the side for Leeds. They did lose Liam Cooper to injury with only 15 minutes played. So a mixed afternoon on that front. No Ivan Toney for Brentford, Darren, ruled out by a bout of COVID. They got Watford at home on Friday night, so you'd imagine he will miss that one as well. How big a loss is he for them?
Huge loss. We know that he doesn't just provide goals, and obviously from penalties he's terrific, but he's a leader, and they are fighting to stay in the Premier League, and they need leaders. Now, you have to say that the run that they're on at the moment, only 2 wins in their last 9, it would be easy to be uncharitable and say that the wheels have come off. But they will have known, Thomas Frank will have known, that there would be a period when it would get difficult after their really, really positive start. And that start has proved a bit of a cushion for them as well, because it means that even though they're going through difficult runs where they're coming against superior teams who are working them out gradually, they still do have that buffer that gives them a bit of daylight between themselves. I mean, what, they're 12th at the moment? And I think they will go through periods where they'll lose key players, and they've got to find a way to get points once they've done that. They'll be gutted that they couldn't see it out today, because, I mean, that goal went in fifth minute of injury time, I think it was. They'll be absolutely devastated that they couldn't see that out. It would have given them even more breathing space, but they need big players like Toney, and when they don't have them, they've got to be able to find a way to win, keep it tight, keep their heads together, and then they'll be able to get themselves into a position where they can start thinking about another season in the top flight.
It's delivered high, and it's got in! Would you believe it? It's been Edouard Mendy, and West Ham have surely won it late on here!
And here now is Wilson, edge of the area, and he fires it into the net! Newcastle lead here by a goal to nil.
Southampton 1, Brighton 0. Armando Broja is the man who's made the breakthrough. Wolves can't believe it. They really cannot believe that this has happened, but Liverpool have made that breakthrough. Divock Origi put it into the back of the net.
Ralph Hasenhüttl can't believe his eyes. It is Southampton 1, Brighton 1 in the 8th minute of added on time. Neil Mopay.
Oh, what a goal that is by Bernardo Silva. Curled into the top corner. Manchester City's 14th consecutive victory over Watford.
And wait for it. Fred, with his right foot, fires one into the top corner. Absolutely superb finish. The Ranić reign has begun.
Spurs 3, Norwich 0, 13 minutes to go. Not Harry Kane this time, but Heung-min Son.
Leeds United 2, Brentford 2. It's come in the last second. Patrick Bamford.
Conte got the faintest of touches for the first goal. Now he's got a header to put Aston Villa ahead. They thought they were ahead just before half-time. Now they definitely are. It's Villa 2, Leicester City 1.
Yeah, it was a big weekend down at the bottom of the table. Everton in action against Arsenal on Monday night. They are only 5 points clear of the bottom three. And Newcastle back within touching distance. A massive win for Eddie Howe. Their first of the season, the 15th time of asking Callum Wilson's goal, giving them a 1-0 win against Burnley. It was their first clean sheet of the season as well, which I know will have delighted their new management team. Any complaints about the goal, Darren, because Sean Dyche was a bit unhappy that maybe Nick Pope was fouled in the build-up. How did you see it?
No, I don't think it was a foul. And, you know, if I don't think that was a foul, then I can't think that the goal that Leicester should have had stand was a foul either. But, you know, as far as Newcastle are concerned, I'll say the same thing I said about Manchester United. The clean sheet was the most important aspect of the performance because it showed that the players are ready to put in a shift. All hands went to the pump. And I think that is going to be such an important platform to build on if they're going to stay in the Premier League. I think they've got their eyes on Watford, who can't keep clean sheets. I think it's 25 or 26 games since they last kept a clean sheet. And Everton above them, who've got horrific injuries. The morale is poor as well. I think Newcastle have got those two clubs in their sights. And if they can maybe build on this now, and under Eddie Howe, they've got the right man. I saw those scenes at the end of the game. Trevor probably talked to them better than me. And you can see a team that are together. You can see a team that are unified. You can see how much the points meant to Eddie Howe, the determination in his face, his coaching staff. But you could also see the players as well going to salute the fans. They're in it. They're ready. They've got their sleeves rolled up. And I think this is by no means, even though statistically the odds are against them, I think they're ready to defy the odds.
It's a big month ahead, isn't it? In terms of the quality of opposition they will face. But as Darren said, that defensive solidity, newfound as it is, will be important. Darren's already let the genie out of the bottle, Trevor, in terms of Jesse Lingard, heavily linked over the weekend with a potential move to St James's Park. Talk that they are willing to make him the highest paid player in their history. Same question I asked about Connor Cody, really. Is Jesse Lingard the type of character that you want in a relegation scrap?
Well, he is, because you need, I think at times, I think like this, you need an experienced player who, although Jesse's probably not been in a relegation battle, he understands what it takes in his role to take responsibility, get the bull by the horns, get on the ball and make things happen. We've seen his impact at West Ham. I thought it was absolutely outstanding. And I think Newcastle would definitely thrive with a signing like that. I agree with Darren. I think they need to look at especially their central defensive area, because they need experience. They need someone who's a good man who has a lot of pride in his performances and wants to achieve something at Newcastle. Not just a player with a name who's going to go there, get injured and just watch whatever unfold. So, yeah, I think, Jesse, I think there's a lot of glory going to Newcastle because we know what the fans are like. We know what the city's like. I think if you go there and you keep Newcastle United FC in the Premier League and what's going to come next, I think there's a huge amount of glory to go there. Being made the most well-paid player in the club's history, I think Jesse's going to do that anyway because he's probably on mega bucks at Manchester United. So that doesn't surprise me, but I do feel he's a player that can affect it. But they have got good forwards. And it was quite telling what Eddie Howe said after the game. You know, he seemed like he was happy with his squad. So I wouldn't imagine that they're going to go in and buy four or five players. They might buy two, maybe three really good players who are going to go straight into the team and who are going to affect results.
As good a win as it was for Newcastle, it felt like a significant defeat for Burnley as well. One shot on target, haven't won away from home since May. And Maxwell Cornet, their bright hope for the season, hobbling off as well. If he's out for an extended period of time, you really will start to fear for Sean Dyche's team. Let's talk Tottenham 3, Norwich 0. Good win in the end for Tottenham, although they did present a couple of really good chances to Norwich in the early exchanges. They score three goals at home. Harry Kane doesn't get any of them. Fred has actually scored more goals now in the Premier League this season, Darren, than the England captain.
Stop it. Stop it.
It's a
stop
stat. It's a genuine stat.
It's one of those misleading stats that anybody with two eyes can tell you that it means so little. I mean, I bet you Harry Kane finishes with four or five times the amount of goals Fred gets by the end. End of the season. I've got no concerns about that. Must just say very quickly, I know the scoreline looks emphatic for Spurs, but Norwich, it showed that Norwich needs strikers because they had, I was at the game, they had terrific chances in either half. Timo Pukki misses a sitter after 3 minutes. Josh Sargent misses a sitter. Adam Ida misses a sitter as well in the second half. I mean, Dean Smith needs reinforcements. Tottenham need defenders because their front six state of the art, the back five just in a right state. Honestly, I think as far as the game was concerned, even though Kane didn't score, the fact that other players stepped up to score to kind of just help him through this little difficult patch that he's on showed that they've got a chance. And it's ridiculous, isn't it? Five defeats in seven Premier League games they went on before Conte's arrival. Now they are fifth with a game in hand on West Ham. And if they win that game, they are into the top four. This is just a ridiculous Premier League season.
I tell you what, if you're confident that Harry Kane will get four or five times more goals this season than Fred, I'm confident that Sargent won't get more Premier League goals this season than Fred. And you got to mention it because I got a lot of stick for suggesting in the summer that Norwich hadn't properly invested. They were saying, well, we spent £60 million. I'm sorry, if you spent a lot of that money on Sargent, you've spent £60 million badly. And I'm not sure how much revenue Dean Smith will have to rectify those recruitment errors in January. Trevor, in terms of the top four, Darren's mentioned their game in hand for Spurs, sitting relatively comfortable at the moment. Are they genuine Champions League contenders?
I think potentially you have to look at who's in charge, look at the whole football club. As a brand, as recruitment-wise, you look at the manager, he could recruit top players. Is Daniel Levy going to give him a war chest in January where he can bring in some quality, especially in that defensive area? I think the fact that they've got the amount of points that they've got, they could supersede West Ham with that game in hand if they win it. I think you have to say they're serious because, like we've all just said, they've got quality in forward areas. And if you spark or you can get the catalyst going with Harry Kane and he can start scoring as willingly as he does for the England side, I think they're going to be a dangerous unit and they could start bringing out and producing some really good performances against the top sides as well.
What about the finish from Lucas Moura? Again, he was nominated in the cult hero category by a lot of Spurs fans on the boot room on Sunday night, probably just because of that hat-trick that he scored in the Champions League semi-final. But that was some strike, Darren.
It was. I mean, it was one of those ones where we're all sitting there reporting on the game. And when even a journalist is like, whoa,
what a goal that was. You know, that that tells you, because normally the goal goes in, everyone says, who scored it? Who crossed for it? Whatever. You know, you've been in a press room, press box, Crook. But this was special because he poked it one way around Billy Gilmore, went around the other side of him, grabbed the ball, traded passes with Son. He looked to have lost control, then regained control, stuck it in the top corner. A truly outstanding goal. I mean, obviously not as good as maybe an overhead kick from the edge of an area.
How many minutes have we gone without mentioning it? Wow. That is a record, Darren. So congratulations for breaking the record.
I remember when Gareth Bale did an overhead kick in the Champions League final, and my kids were going, oh my goodness. And I go, I know someone who's done a better goal than that. And they go, no, you don't. I go, yeah, Travis, have a look at this. And they go, whoa.
Yeah, but you've got to put it into context. Yeah. You said it there. Gareth Bale was a Champions League final.
All right.
Trevor's was against Barnsley. Cookie. In the FA Cup.
It's not like you being horrible. You're usually really nice. It doesn't suit you, sir.
It's because I'm filling in the Sam Matterface role, aren't I? So I need to be a little bit nasty. The one game we haven't mentioned yet from the weekend was down on the South Coast. It finished Southampton 1, Brighton 1. I was there for Game Day Live. It was an excellent contest, actually. Southampton, as seems to be the story of their season, brilliant in the first half, didn't take the opportunities to kill off Brighton. And then Neil Mopay, what a week he's had, gets booed by his own fans after drawing a blank against Leeds, scores a Trevor Sinclair style overhead kick against West Ham to earn a point, and then strikes in the 98th minute to rescue a draw for his team. I spoke to him after the game. He was really happy about silencing his critics. But I know, Darren, you wanted to speak about Ralph Hasenhüttl and a pretty scathing attack on his goalkeeper, Alex McCarthy. Basically, the Southampton manager wasn't happy that McCarthy didn't let him know that he was injured, and therefore James Ward-Prowse actually sat a bit deeper when the free kick that led to the equaliser came into the penalty area, playing Mopay onside. Match of the Day did a pretty good review of this with Danny Murphy and basically made it clear that McCarthy, for about the last 16, 17 minutes, wasn't taking goal kicks. So surely Hasenhüttl should have realised he was injured and taken decisive action if he wished to do so. And I do think if it finished 1-0, maybe the narrative would have been very different and Ralph Hasenhüttl may well have actually praised McCarthy for heroically battling on.
Yeah, I wonder if maybe Ralph might have woken up this morning and regretted what he'd said, because from what I understand, it's normally around about an hour or so. We've both covered games on the South Coast at St. Mary's Crook, so you know this. It's normally an hour or so before the managers come in, but he was straight into the press conference afterwards, maybe just feeling the emotion of losing the points. Trevor can speak better to you know, how your blood is up sometimes after the final whistle, a result hasn't gone your way, you've lost and you're lashing out. And I just think maybe when he calms down, he might think to himself, I've made a bit of a mistake there, because our job as football reporters is to say what we can see. You commentate, I write. In a game, if you saw that the goalkeeper was struggling and that someone had to take his goal kicks for him, you would tell your listeners, I don't understand why the manager isn't making a change here.
Yeah, no, Darren, you're right. I think he'll be disappointed. I agree. I feel he'll be embarrassed by what he said and how he's kind of left McCarthy under the bus there, because any manager worth his salt, if you've got a decent number two, you take McCarthy off. And although they got away with it until the last minute with other players, which again, the starting position of the opposition, if you've got a defender in there taking it, they can be a lot more advanced. The offside line's been changed. The game's a lot bigger. So if you don't win that second ball on the first kick, you're very open to counter-attacking and you're very spread out, and it's easier to create chances. But I think that the most important thing is Ward-Prowse going onto the line. That's an invitation for all the forwards to say, you're never going to be offside. Mm. So as soon as this ball goes in, cheat. It's almost like cheating, because the offside line's not. It's been moved to the byline, and I think they deserved it. You know, by not changing the goalkeeper, I feel that was the defining moment of that game. And it stopped them getting over the line. And actually, I thought Brighton were really struggling in the defensive line, and Southampton should have scored so many goals. But Brighton's back three of Duffy and Byrne and Veltman, I thought they were really poor and easy to get at.
The Southampton in a relegation fight, the last thing you need in a relegation fight is to alienate your goalkeeper and maybe other players in the dressing room who might be allies of him as well. Sorry, Crook, you go ahead.
No, you're absolutely right. I was just going to say, when you talk about changing the goalkeeper, it was unfortunate timing because Fraser Forster, the deputy, actually picked up an injury in training towards the back end of the week. So he wasn't on the bench and won't be back for some time either. Harry Lewis was their backup option, a rookie when it comes to the Premier League. And I know Southampton have spent the weekend scouring for a potential free agent. I know they've been in contact with 40-year-old Willy Caballero, the former Man City and Chelsea goalkeeper. So it's going to be interesting to see who does keep goal against Arsenal at the weekend. But injuries taking centre stage because Lewis Dunk was absent for Brighton. His knee problem is being assessed. That will be an issue for Brighton, particularly with Adam Webster also sidelined if he's out for any period of time. It's no wins now in 10 for Brighton. 8 draws, Trevor, in those 10 games. How do they start turning 1 point into 3?
Well, I think if the injuries that they've got, so especially Lewis Dunk, because I think he's a fantastic defender, I think they need to go into the transfer market because the back three of Byrne, Duffy and Beltman weren't good enough. They look slow. They look sluggish. I mean, the Southampton forwards were enjoying themselves. If they could finish, they would have been out of sight by the end of the first half. So they need to look at that defensive line. They need to shore that up, whether that means changing the system, maybe bringing a couple of players in front of that back three and changing the whole system just to protect them for now. I don't know, but they look so vulnerable on the attacks from Southampton. So they need to change it about. And they've got good forwards. That's why they're digging out results. They've got good forwards. Maupai, I think he's a fabulous player. You know, he lives on the edge, but he is a maverick. And he reminds me a little bit of Di Canio, how he can go around and get goals and he can affect the game. They've got also other good forwards. They definitely need to strengthen up that back line. And if they do that, they'll start turning some of them draws into wins and they'll be way up the table.
Well, it's fitting that we've ended the podcast by talking about veterans at Mavericks. We're with Trevor Sinclair and Darren Lewis, who probably fit into both of those categories. thanks very much for joining us tonight. Darren will be back on Thursday as we look ahead to another busy Premier League weekend. I'm sure we'll see Trevor very soon as well. This has been the Game Day Podcast from TalkSport.
The Premier League All Access Podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.